Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome Him. Thank you, purport. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of His devotees. Here the word yatavidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with His different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only, because they have no other object for service but the Lord, and therefore the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, He is always attentive to all the matters of His pure devotees. There are others who designate Him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness, and a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with His different welcomers. Read the verse again. Bhagavamstatrabantunam Pauranam Anuvatinam Yata Vidyupasangam Ya Sarvesham Manamadadhe. Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive Him and welcome Him. Om Gyanat Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this is a very sweet verse. Krishna is entering into Dwarka, and He's meeting with all of the different citizens. It's explained in the previous verses that He's meeting His different relatives. They're listed. And then Mahatma Prabhu spoke about how the prostitutes came to visit Krishna. In the previous verse, there's dramatists, artists, dancers, and then different brahmanas, historians, genealogists, and learned speakers. And in this verse, it's talking about how Krishna, he reciprocates with each and every one of them. That not that everybody's just coming and worshipping Krishna, everybody's pleased to have Krishna come back to Dwarka, obviously, they're all pure devotees, although it's Krishna's pastimes in the material world, so there is a, how do you say in English, at fetish, there's a mixture. There's Krishna's nityasiddha devotees who are there eternally in Dwarka, but there are also devotees who are achieving perfection and they're on the way back to the spiritual world. So they're also pure devotees, but they may not be on the highest level, but they're on the way back to Godhead. So Krishna here is meeting all of these devotees and He's reciprocating with all of them personally. And the main point that Srila Prabhupada brings up in the purport is that Krishna is a person. And because Krishna is a person, then He can reciprocate with everybody personally. And this is not the only time that we hear this. This is not a new thing. But it's a very important point for us in our spiritual lives, at least for me. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yayatamam papadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham, that to the degree that we surrender to Him, to that degree He rewards us accordingly. That's the natural behavior of somebody who is not looking for something for somebody. That's somebody who's in a secure position who doesn't need anything. Krishna is Atmaram. If you go to Him and you give something, you want something, and you pay the price, then He'll reciprocate accordingly. Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj explains how that's the position of Purusha in the other class I was mentioning about the principles of male and female. This may not relate exactly to man and women, especially in this age right now. But that's the principle of male and female, that the male, he reciprocates with the female. The male is there, the male principle, and the female comes, I'd like this, I'd like that, with different desires, and the male reciprocates with that. So that's Krishna's position. The living entities who are female by nature, they're full of different desires, and they approach Krishna with those desires, whether they be material or spiritual, and Krishna fulfills those desires, because he can. He has all the facilities, he has all the everything that needs that is needed to be able to reciprocate those desires. So Krishna says that then, to the degree that you worship me, with the desires that you want to be fulfilled, that you come with to me, then, in general, then I will reciprocate those. Although we'll speak about that a little bit more later as well. And we see that that happens with devotees. One very famous example is Gopal Bhatta Goswami. That Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they were in Vrindavan, and they were worshipping different deities. They were establishing Krishna consciousness in Vrindavan, fulfilling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. They established the Radha Damodara temple. They established Madan Mohan temple. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami had his Shalagram Shilas, and he was transcendentally envious of his godbrothers, feeling like, you know, I've got my Shalagram Shilas, I know that they're Krishna or Narayan, but, you know, I can't dress them, I can't decorate them, I can't, you know, put Krishna's flute in his hands, I can't give him this big turban and, you know, fold his dhoti, and I can't serve Krishna personally like that. And he had that desire, which is a spiritual desire. And so Krishna, on the Nrisimha Chaturdashi day, then he manifested the form of Radharaman from one of Gopal Bhatta Goswami's Shilas. And he didn't do that just because, I feel like manifesting myself out of a Shila. It doesn't generally happen. But he did that because Gopal Bhatta Goswami wanted to serve him in that way. So he reciprocated with his devotee. And there's many other examples. Another famous example that I don't know in so much detail is when Jagannath assumes the form of an elephant that we have on Snaniyatra every year after their bath, and they come in this magnificent form with trunks, I'm sure devotees have seen. Because there was one devotee, as far as I know, in Jagannath Puri, that he was a Ganesh worshipper, and he didn't quite understand the tattva between Ganesh and Krishna, who is who, and then he was approaching Krishna, but he didn't really have faith that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna manifested himself in that form to convince that devotee that, you know, I know your heart, I know where you're at, I know what you want, I know your level of knowledge. And he's showing them, no, I am everything, I'm Ganesh also. So if you worship me, then it's all included. So Krishna is very personal, and he reciprocates with his devotees according to their desires. Actually, if Krishna didn't reciprocate with us, we wouldn't be here, because it's difficult to give up all of the things that we give up. Give up your hair, give up sleeping in, laying in the morning, give up sex life, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, give up watching the football, giving up going to the cinema, giving up everything pretty much, especially how we're brought up in the West that, you know, when they say, give up the four regulative principles, it's like, well, is there anything left that I can do after that? So if Krishna didn't give us reciprocation, if Krishna didn't give us bliss, if Krishna didn't give us knowledge and didn't guide us, then we would not be able to practice spiritual life. It would be too dry and we wouldn't have a taste, and then we wouldn't be able to practice spiritual life. And I think if we sat down with the devotees here, I don't know how many devotees we have here, maybe 50 devotees, everybody could write down a few sentences of how Krishna has reciprocated with them personally in their spiritual lives. There's so many different special arrangements that Krishna makes, especially in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, that we don't know about Krishna, and then he appears from nowhere and speaks through a particular person, or you see a number plate and it says Krishna on it, or there's so many different stories that devotees have that Krishna has taken an active role in guiding them back to him. And that should give us faith that Krishna is not just there in the cloud somewhere or there in the spiritual world with his pure devotees, but that Krishna is here with us live at every second. And he's watching what we're doing, and he's just trying to encourage us that just turn to me, just serve me, just remember me, engage with me, I'm here waiting for you. Krishna doesn't generally interfere with devotees, with jiva's free will. So if somebody doesn't want to serve Krishna, then he reciprocates with that desire also. But it's him who's doing it, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita then. The demigod worshippers, they worship the demigods, but it's me who fulfills their desires. It's not the demigods. And when they perform fire sacrifices, okay, they're performing fire sacrifice for the demigods, but I am the butter, I am the fire, I'm the utensils, I'm everything that they're using. So Krishna is wanting us to reciprocate with him. He's wanting us to engage with him. And although he doesn't interfere with the individual living entity's free will, but he's eager to engage. I heard one time my spiritual master, Srila Shivaram Swami, said that he doesn't usually interfere with the devotee's free will, but with Gopa Kumar, it says in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that he did interfere. He was waiting for such a long time. He said to Gopa Kumar that I was waiting for lifetimes and lifetimes for you to turn back to me. And you weren't coming to me, you weren't making any steps. So in the end, I made some arrangement to trick you into serving me. I'd have to look into the details more, but the point is that Krishna is very eager for us to engage with him, to serve him. Krishna loves us much more than we can imagine. And Srila Prabhupada says in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that Krishna is far more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we are. So by hook or by crook, as Prabhupada said, Krishna will try and pull us back somehow or another. Probably most of you weren't planning to be Hare Krishnas when you were growing up. That wasn't when you went to school and met the careers advisor. And they said, what would you like to do? What's your career plan? And you said, I'd like to be a Hare Krishna devotee in the temple. Probably better anyway, because they probably discouraged you or called the police or something anyway. So, but it generally wasn't our plan. But somehow or another, Krishna makes these arrangements and Krishna tricks us. But how do we understand that Krishna is a person? Prabhupada said that he came to purify the West of personalism and voidism. And when devotees said to him that there's no, you know, where are the Mayavadis here in the West? Prabhupada said, well, that's you. You're the Mayavadi. And that's true. Because if we're not self-realized souls and we haven't realized our relationship with Krishna, then that means we have somewhat of an impersonal understanding of the Supreme, because it's not complete, it's covered by ignorance. And that generally means that I'm trying to be the enjoyer, I'm trying to be the controller, and my life is arranged around my desires. My life is arranged around my enjoyment, not around Krishna's enjoyment. That means that we're impersonalists to some degree, because we're not realizing the personal nature of God, that he is the controller, he is the enjoyer. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Ada Sababritya, that he's the enjoyer, he's to be served, and we're his servants. We're the enjoyed. So we have that impersonal nature, and so it's difficult to understand that Krishna is really a person. If we're on the subconscious level competing with Krishna, then how are you going to understand Krishna? It's not going to work. You're trying to be Krishna, and at the same time trying to understand Krishna, it's going to be limited how much you can understand him. But Krishna is very merciful, and he knows what level we're at. Krishna is the ultimate preacher. He's the best preacher, just as we see the Vedas or the Bhagavatam. It's all done step by step. It's all done systematically then. Most of the Vedas are about karmakanda. Most of the Vedas are about sense gratification. And then some of it is about impersonal liberation. And then a very small percentage is about devotion to Krishna. It's a very small percentage is about bhakti, because the general mass of people aren't ready for that. So Shrila Vyasadeva, he writes all of the Vedas, and he's despondent that I just did all of this, like somebody goes to work, go and drive a bus. At the end of the day, then they don't feel like, you know, that was particularly enlivening. I just, you know, drove a bus to pay the bills. Vyasadeva, it's not exactly the same, but he wrote all of the Vedas, but because there wasn't devotion in there, because he wasn't talking about Krishna personally, he didn't feel satisfied. Now, I've done all of this work, but what's the point? And it wasn't until he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam that he was satisfied. So Krishna is the ultimate preacher. He makes these arrangements to bring one from the point of being a sense gratifier to the point of understanding the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam and becoming a self-realized soul. Krishna is the preacher, so he makes different arrangements for us as well. Just yesterday I was talking to some guests briefly in the Tamparam, and we were talking about, you know, what is the altar? What is on the altar? And, you know, why is there an altar? And why are the deities? And what are deities? And because for Westerners, it's like, you know, what is all of this? And I was saying to them that having a relationship with God can be quite distant, even if you believe in God. It can be quite distant. And where is he? I can't see him. I can't talk to him. I can't hold his hand. I can't tell him how I can tell him how I feel, but, you know, I can't hear him respond. So I was saying that the deity is there to help us to engage in that relationship, to make it more practical. That, okay, I can see God. I can dress God. I can feed God. I can eat what he ate. And you can speak to him. It's more easy than just imagining it in your mind. So Krishna makes these different arrangements. And a very important arrangement that Krishna makes is that he sends the spiritual master, whether that be Dikshaguru or Shikshaguru, because we can only approach Krishna through the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagava prasada, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. We can only approach Krishna through the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada would say this so many times in his lectures, that one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. And we see, when we have a spiritual master, or say Dikshaguru or a prominent Shikshaguru in our lives, that there's somebody that we look up to, somebody that we respect as a spiritual personality. But we see also that they're a person. It's not that they're just a tattva. They are a tattva as well, but they're also a person. I remember when I joined Soho Street like 20 years ago, then I was so amazed by all the devotees coming to give class. And Jai Advaita Maharaj would come and give class. And then Jai Prataka Maharaj would come and give class. I mean, they're such different personalities. Just look at their bodies. It's totally different what they speak with, the way that they speak and what they emphasize and their mood. And Sridhar Maharaj would come. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would come. And they're all so different. Shivaram Maharaj would come. Radhanaswami would come. And it was very interesting for me that they're all bona fide. And they're all gurus. And they're all spiritual. And they're all authorities. But they're so different. There's so many different types of people. And for me, it was interesting because I came from, you know, kind of impersonal background. I was interested in Buddhism. I was teaching Buddhist monks English in India when I was 18. That was my first real taste of spiritual life, being in India. And there's this impersonal conception. But seeing that, I was like, wow, you know, they're all people. And they all sing differently. Dev Amrita Maharaj, the way he sings is so different than my spiritual master, Shivaram Maharaj, how he sings, or the way that they give classes, or their emphasis on the philosophy is also different because they're people. And then if you have personal interactions with them, then you also see that there's some things that they like and there's some things that they don't like, which may differ than other spiritual masters, even within ISKCON. And if you develop a relationship with them, then they also reciprocate with you differently according to where you're at. Like my spiritual master, he reciprocates differently with his senior disciples than he does with his junior disciples. And you see, if you've been around for a few years as well, that the way he deals with you also changes. It's like, not with me, but with other senior devotees, kind of deals with them in a more friendly way. You know, it's more informal. With newer devotees, it's more distant. And then there's, you know, that there's some foods that they like, there's some foods that they don't like, there's some melodies that they like, there's some melodies that they don't like, some places that they like, some places that they don't like. And also another point is that they can be very sensitive as well. I don't know if other devotees have experienced that with their spiritual masters, but I experienced that with my spiritual master, that I think a lot of devotees are kind of scared of Shivaram Swami. He can be quite heavy and strong. And he definitely is. But he's also extremely sensitive. And if you're having a personal interaction with him, you say something that doesn't seem to be of very great importance, but he's extremely sensitive to all of the different things that you say, very much aware of what's happening around him, and very sensitive. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because Krishna is just the same. And this gives us an indication of what it is to have a personal God. And that Krishna likes certain things, and he doesn't like other things. Krishna is very sensitive. It's explained that Krishna's body is as soft as butter. And if you just touch his body, then it changes color. That's why Mother Yashoda and the gopis are so anxious that Krishna is going out to the forest with the cows and not wearing any shoes. They're in constant anxiety. What's going to happen? He's going to have thorns and stones and so many things, snakes. What's going to happen, you know? Krishna says, you give all my cows shoes, and I'll wear shoes. Don't give all of my cows shoes, and I'm not going to wear any shoes. So Krishna is a person. Krishna is very sensitive. Krishna has his own likes and dislikes. And that shapes our culture. That shapes our lifestyle. Krishna likes dhotis. Krishna likes saris. Krishna likes vegetarian diet. Krishna likes getting up early in the morning. He also likes dancing all night in the dark, but we don't follow that part of it. But this is why we're living as we're living. Krishna likes it that we're renounced and simple. That's why men are shaving their heads. So Krishna has these particular desires. Different devotees bring up different points. Krishna West kind of thing. I was talking to one devotee about this the other day, that he was saying that quarters, they're not even Indian, that there's Mughal. I think he was saying in Arabic, quarter means shirt, something like that. He's saying it's not even Indian. Quarters, yeah, maybe. Dhotis and chadars say this is like, you know, really traditional. And he was also bringing up the point that in general we dress Krishna like a Mughal prince. So he was bringing up interesting points. Is it a very intelligent devotee maybe watching right now? So it was an interesting conversation. But the reason that we wear dhotis, the reason that we shave our heads, the reason that we wear tilak, the reason that we wear neck beads, saris, get up early in the morning, we eat what we eat, it's because Krishna likes it. Sometimes we may forget that it's not just a secular thing, it's not just an Indian thing. Sometimes they say this, it's Indian. It's not about being Indian, it's about what Krishna likes. If you see different statues, even in London, of people from a few hundred years ago, what are they wearing? They're not wearing Levi's or shell suits, you know, or like hoodies. Can you imagine you go to a statue and there's like angels with hoodies on, you know, and like headphones? No, they're wearing robes. That's what they wear. That's what they wore. So it originally comes anyway from the Vedic culture, but that's what Krishna likes. And to be a devotee, then we have to be very conscious of what Krishna likes, because we're wanting to give him pleasure. And for us, on not the transcendental platform where we can speak to Krishna directly, then the spiritual master will explain to us, no, you do this, you do that. And then we can get that personal interaction, understand what Krishna's desire is. So just as Krishna is reciprocating personally here with everybody who came to meet him, it describes in the next verse what Krishna did, that according to who came to meet him, then Krishna would bow his head, he would exchange greetings, he would embrace them, shake their hands, look and smile, give assurances and award benedictions according to who he met. We hear this when Krishna would meet the Pandavas as well, then he would, I think, pay obeisances to Yudhishthir Maharaj because he was the king, and embrace Arjuna. And he would accept obeisances from Nakul and Sahadeva, I think he'd embrace Bhima as well. So according with the seniority of those devotees, Krishna would reciprocate in a different way. And Krishna does the same with us. Krishna does exactly the same with us. It's not like, you know, he does one thing in the books and now it's 2019, so it's not valid anymore. It's exactly the same principle. And Krishna will actually reciprocate with where we're at. Like often we hear that when we go to serve Krishna, then we're giving something to Krishna. You know, we're giving him, you know, our morning, or we're giving him our evening, or we're giving him the time that it takes to chant our 16 rounds, or we're giving him, you know, 50% of our income, whatever it may be. But he's more interested in what we have behind our backs. Then we hear that sometimes. And that may be true. I wouldn't say he's more interested in that. He's interested in both. He's not ungrateful. But an interesting thing with Krishna is that he's so kind and he reciprocates the desires of his devotees that if you go as a practicing sadhaka to Krishna to give him something, say you're a brahmachari, you live in the temple, you're trying to give your life to Krishna, but we still have material desires within our heart, then what Krishna will do is that he'll take what you're giving him, say thank you very much, and he'll fulfill the desires that are in your heart. Because he loves his devotees, he wants them to be happy, and he knows where we're at. And subconsciously, we may not be asking for those things. Consciously, we may not say, Krishna, I want a Ferrari. But if that's in your heart, well, I haven't seen many devotees get Ferraris so far, but if you have some desires in your heart, then what I've experienced with other devotees as well is that Krishna will fulfill those desires. Because often those are things that you need to go through to advance in Krishna consciousness. One thing is that when you get those things, then you realize that it's not the goal of life. But there's different things that we have to go through in our Krishna consciousness also to get to the platform of being Niskinchana, that I don't have any more material desires. And for devotees, even though they may not ask for those things because they're trying to practice pure devotional service, but Krishna will arrange those, he will make arrangements to fulfill those desires so you can go through those things so you can understand actually that the only thing that's really worth having is Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates with different devotees according to their levels of advancement. One nice example that you may not have heard is from Hungary. There was one Mataji called Radhakund Mataji. Anybody of you know her? Maybe nobody. Did you know her? Okay. So Radhakund Mataji, she was living in the ashram. She joined around 1990, quite early on in the Hungarian Yatra. She was already divorced at that time, and she had a son, I think, who was already grown up. And she joined the ashram, and she was looking after Tulsi Devi. And she was always a very good devotee, very nice devotee, very personal, very kind and loving towards the devotees. And then later on in her life, she contracted cancer, and she was getting sicker and sicker. And then at one point, my spiritual master told her to start writing a diary. So she made this log of her spiritual realizations and her spiritual life. And they published those diaries in Hungary, but they only published them in Hungarian. They won't publish them in English, so they remain in Hungarian. But there was a big turning point in her spiritual life where she was chanting japa one time in the temple room in New Vajradam, and she was thinking of this, I think it's written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how if one chants Hare Krishna but doesn't chant it attentively, if one chants inattentively, it's like hitting Krishna with a stick. So it's like causing pain to Krishna, because Krishna is there. It's like I invite you to dinner at my house, and you come sit down, and I say, just 1 second, I'll be here in a minute, and then I go in the other room and I just do something else. And it's like you came to my house, but then you don't reciprocate with me. So it's like that if we chant Hare Krishna and we're thinking about something else, or we're doing something else, we're talking to other people, it's like, well, Krishna's like, oh, why did you call me here? What do you want? So it can be offensive to Krishna as a person. It can be neglectful. So she was thinking about this when she was chanting japa in the temple room in New Vajradam. And she was praying that, Krishna, if, you know, I don't want to cause you pain by my chanting, that if you were here, then I would stroke you, I would caress you if you were here with me. I wouldn't hit you with a stick, obviously. But if only you were here with me, then I would stroke you. And what actually happened was that Krishna manifested to her in the temple room. That Krishna came, and he came, and he sat down next to her. And she was chanting japa. It was in the morning, early morning in New Vajradham. And Krishna was sitting there. And she didn't know what to do. And she became very shy. And she didn't actually do anything. She didn't do anything. And what Krishna did was he turned his head and put his head on her shoulder, like inviting her to, you know, you said you can stroke me if I would be here. Stroke me. But she was too shy and too shocked, and so she didn't do anything. And then after some time, Krishna disappeared. But after that point in her spiritual life, if you read in the diaries, then her spiritual advancement went from, I don't know where, Anatta Nivritti, Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, to something very, very high, I don't know, Baba Bhakti or something like that. And after that, her spiritual life was basically experiencing ecstatic emotions 24 hours a day. And she was writing different realizations, and she became very, very advanced. And then ultimately she left her body in New Vajradham and went back to the spiritual world. So this may sound shocking, it may sound like sahaja, but it's not. Krishna loves us, Krishna wants to reciprocate with us. And if we have faith, and if we have a desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will not just reciprocate that, but as we hear that one step we make towards Krishna, Krishna will make 100 steps towards us. So as we serve Krishna and we develop a desire to please him, then he'll reciprocate with that. But he will reciprocate with different devotees according to what level they're on. And not just within our own spiritual advancement, but within our preaching as well, and within the results that we have within our preaching. Srila Prabhupada, he's a Nitya Siddha. He's an eternal associate of Krishna. He was in the spiritual world, and he explained that Krishna said to him, I want you to go down to the material world and write your books. And Krishna Prabhupada said, no, I don't want to go down to the material world. Thank you very much. I'd rather stay here. And Krishna said, no, go down. It will be okay. You just write your books. There will be prasadam. There'll be devotees, and then you can come back to me. And Prabhupada said, no, I don't like that idea. I'm not very enthusiastic for that service. And Krishna said, please, just write your books. That's the main thing. There'll be devotees. Everything will be okay. Then you come back. Prabhupada said, okay. So Prabhupada comes from the spiritual world. He's a Nitya Siddha. We see when he was on this world that he, well, I think the main sacrifice, this is just my speculation, but the main sacrifice of Prabhupada was giving up the spiritual world to come to the material world and preach Krishna consciousness. That's quite a sacrifice. And then we know that when he was here, then 70 years old, he left Vrindavan, where he was absorbed in serving Krishna. And he said he went through fire to give us Krishna consciousness. He could easily have died when he was on the ship coming to the West. And started with absolutely nothing. He didn't even know when he came to the West, will there be any food to eat? Because all they eat is meat. Will there be anything to eat? I don't know. So what kind of surrender is that? It's 100%. So Prabhupada's surrender is at a particular level, the highest level, and the results that he gets from his preaching is also phenomenal. We see what Prabhupada did within 11 years. Nobody else is doing that. We even see spiritual masters within our movement, very empowered living entities, but they're not opening 100 temples around the world. They're not doing the same thing. There may be some who have even more disciples than Srila Prabhupada, but in terms of that velocity, that momentum, it doesn't seem to be the same that Prabhupada had, because Prabhupada was on a different level. And then, okay, we bring it down. Then we have our spiritual masters in our movement who are all followers of Srila Prabhupada. They're still achieving amazing things, opening temples, beginning whole yatras, initiating thousands of disciples. But it's on a slightly different level. Like my spiritual master said one time, there was Vyas Puja in Hungary. So many devotees go from England as well to Vyas Puja there. And, you know, they worship his feet, wash his feet and offer him flower petals, and devotees are queuing up and glorifying him, bringing him presents. And he said, one time, he said, with Srila Prabhupada, he said this was happening every day. He said the Guru Puja when Prabhupada was here was like this, but it would happen every day. And he said, because there's different levels of devotees, so if you have a particular level of devotee, Krishna reciprocates with that. He sends worship, he sends devotees according to that. Different level than another level of worship. And then with us, speak about myself, come to Krishna consciousness to avoid suffering, get our heads together, try and follow the four regulative principles, then there's a different level of results that you have in terms of respect, or that you have in terms of preaching as well, and preaching results. In Śrīla Bhakti-caritamrita, it's explained that according to the advancement of the person who's preaching, then to that degree he can elevate his followers. So if one is an uttamadhikari, then he can elevate his followers a lot faster, and he can elevate a lot more people at the same time. If one is a madhyamadhikari, then less, and if one is a kanishtadhikari, then less. So Krishna reciprocates, but according to where we're at, according to different devotees. Like he says, yayatam ampapadyante, but that can mean different things in different circumstances. One instance where that even gets Krishna into trouble is in his Vrindavan pastimes, because we know that Krishna says yayatam ampapadyante, that as you reward, as you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. Krishna makes his promise. But then in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he kind of says the opposite. He says, Napadiyeham, that I can't reciprocate what you've given me. He says this to the gopis in Vrindavan, that you've given me everything. They've given up everything to serve him. And Krishna can reciprocate that on a one-to-one level, in terms of quality. But if, as is the situation in Vrindavan, then there's millions or billions of gopis all doing the same thing at the same time to serve him, giving up everything, Krishna can't reciprocate that. So Krishna becomes a debtor. So different reciprocation on different levels. And then Krishna gets into trouble with that, because he's incurred a debt to the gopis, which is becoming greater and greater as time goes on, because they're continuing to serve him, and he can't reciprocate that. It's explained that he can reciprocate it quantitatively with one person. They give him everything. Krishna gives everything to them. But when there's many of them, they all have this one-pointed attention to Krishna. And just because of the tattva, that there's so many of them, Krishna can't give everything to one. This is like they're giving everything to Krishna one-pointedly. But Krishna can't do that because there's billions of them. So then Krishna's stuck. But there is one way that Krishna gets out of it. Anybody know? Not except for you, Mangalahari, because you've heard all about that. Anybody else know? How does Krishna extract himself from that situation? Expands himself as who? No, because he's still in the same, got the same problem. Yeah, that's an interesting point. If he expanded himself as every single gopi. Yeah, interesting point. It's interesting. It's a good point. But that's not the way that it's explained. Any other ideas? Yeah? Yeah, he comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But why does that work? Why does that liquidate his debt? But why is that? Mataji said he's reciprocating by giving love to everybody. But why does that liquidate his debt to the gopis? What's that got to do with the gopis? They're still like, you know, loving Krishna and Krishna's preaching Krishna consciousness. What's that got to do with them? You're cheating, I can see. Say that again, why is it? He wants to experience something else. Yeah, that's right. Because as Lord Chaitanya, Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, and he experiences what that means. He experiences the love of the gopis. That it's interesting because he doesn't actually, as Krishna, he's still stuck. But as Lord Chaitanya, he's not. As Lord Chaitanya, he's not stuck because he's experiencing those emotions. So, but because Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are non-different, then you can say, well, as Lord Chaitanya, then I've liquidated this debt. But as Lord Chaitanya, that he's experiencing that, then he's loving Krishna and he's going through the same emotions that the gopis are experiencing, that separation or that longing to serve and please Krishna. So these are, you know, very elevated topics, way above my head. But just the point that Krishna always reciprocates with us. Krishna reciprocates with us because he's a person. Krishna reciprocates with us because he loves us far more than we can understand. Krishna reciprocates with us in different ways. He comes as a deity form, even though we may not serve the deity correctly. I was a pujari in New Vajradham for 6 years, and there the pujari standards considered very high. But still, the devotees, you know, they forget to wake up, and then they come and wake up the deities late, or anything can happen. You know, you prick the deity with a pin when you're dressing them. Anything can happen. So Krishna is there, personally, undergoing tribulations so that we can serve him. That's my spiritual master said, that's the preaching mood of Krishna, that he comes as a deity to give us an opportunity to serve him. He comes as a deity, he comes as a spiritual master to teach us how to serve him personally and to develop a personal relationship with him. And he reciprocates with us by fulfilling our desires as well, whether they be spiritual desires or material desires. And of course, as practicing devotees, then we don't come to Krishna generally with our material desires, but Krishna sees exactly what's within our hearts. As devotees said when they met Prabhupada, Prabhupada disciples can tell us that supposedly when Prabhupada met you, then he would look straight into your soul and you just feel like, you know, I can't hide anything. He just knows who I am. So similarly with Krishna, he knows who we are. He knows what you want. He knows what your desires are. He knows what we're thinking about. Because he loves us and he knows how to purify us, then often he will fulfill those desires in a way that's conducive for devotional service. And then the last point was that according to our level of advancement, then Krishna will reciprocate with us in our practice and in our preaching as well. Okay, it's 8:30 now. Thank you very much for your attention. If anybody has any comments or questions or good jokes, then you can tell us now. Otherwise, we'll finish. Any questions or comments?